listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Seth Cropsey of the Hudson Institute, a former Deputy Undersecretary of the Navy and big thinker about the imperatives of American sea power, the threats thereto, and what we best do about them. Seth, we were talking a little bit about the South China Sea, the islands that have been built there. And I take your point that today, should we need to do so, we could attack those islands and neutralize the airfields and the surface-to-air missiles and the naval shipyards and the like, or port facilities at least, that are being put into place there. But as you were saying, if you take the longer term view of this and you see it as part of a overall capacity to deny access to the area, that is what the Chinese evidently have in mind, with implications for Taiwan and Japan and South Korea and Vietnam and the Philippines and Guam and other of the nations with whom we are either friends or allies in the region. It does have, it seems to me, a profound implication, at least over time. Do you see it that way? And if so, what should we be doing about those islands now?
I do see it that way. And the South China Sea is not the only place where China is present and increasing its presence. What I mean by that, for example, is that they want to build a naval base in Djibouti, important choke point into the toward the Suez Canal. They've already built a naval base in Pakistan. They own a large portion, most of the container shipping facilities in Piraeus, in Port of Athens. So they have extensive contacts in South America.
The Panama Canal, the Caribbean, we've got Azores even they're talking about, it sounds like. And Seth, we were just teasing out some of the things that just the Chinese alone, we haven't talked about the Russians or the Iranians or others who are increasingly seeking to go to sea. But just staying through this for the moment, when you look as a naval strategist at what the Chinese are putting into place in the Atlantic, in the Caribbean, in the South Asian waters, in the Western Pacific, and elsewhere, are we missing something really momentous that is perhaps slowly, incrementally, though I think at an accelerating pace, developing in terms of situations? I don't know if you could call them on the ground exactly, but certainly on atolls and islands and elsewhere that are having effects on waters that we care about.
Exactly. We're missing the whole thing. The United States policy has been for the past 35 or 40 years to encourage, persuade China to become a stakeholder in the liberal international order. And their actions around the world show that that attempt has failed. And there has been no policy to put in its place, and we're sort of proceeding with no hand on the rudder at all. A more sensible understanding would be that a state of strategic competition exists between the United States and China, and that that has broad implications for our diplomacy, not only with China, but with the nations that surround it and the hard power that's needed to back that up.
You know, Seth Cropsey, the state of strategic competition is one way of putting it, I guess. I friends of ours, including guests on this program, are increasingly referring to it in terms that are a little more stark. Economic war is one. War more generally, albeit perhaps of asymmetric kind rather than the traditional sort so far. Do you think that's overstating it?
No, I don't think so. I just think that the naval and military elements are included in the broader term strategic competition, and economic warfare is a part of that. So I don't disagree.
Let me just ask you then, Seth Cropsey, with these sorts of developments, just from the Chinese alone, when you factor in the evidence that the Russians are actively rebuilding their naval power projection capabilities in all of the areas that you described the Chinese are as well. Modern ships, including capable submarines and aircraft at on land and at sea, and a variety of new missiles and the like. The Iranians are projecting power, albeit modestly at the moment, but nonetheless twitting us a bit by sending ships into Cuba and South Atlantic waters. You've got the North Koreans putting an emphasis on submarine-launched ballistic missiles, for example, among other assets at sea. Does this, taken together, constitute, well, as you call it in your book, mayday for our fleet, given that we may have to contend with more than one of these adversaries at a time?
Yeah, that's the whole point, Frank. The adversaries and potential adversaries are building up their fleet, and ours has been reducing and shows no signs of significant increase, despite the administration's goodwill in trying to do something about it. But not much is happening.
Well, I want to drill down on that in the remaining time we have with you, Seth. Before we get to the numbers of ships and the size of the fleet we should be striving for, which is, of course, extraordinarily important. But let's talk about the condition of the ones we've got. We've had a series of accidents, as we've discussed in the past. We had another one just the other day, the tugboat, as I understand it, in a training exercise, scraped up against one of our guided missile ships. Are our fleet assets, and for that matter, the personnel who operate them, ready for the sorts of challenges that we're talking about?
Yeah, I think they're ready today, but I think there are we're looking at the possibility once again of a hollow force.
But you would say that's a possibility, not a present condition. You hear these readiness ratings for naval aircraft and marine aircraft and, as I say, the problems with training of personnel on these ships. It sounds as though it's much more grim than that, Seth.
Yeah. There's a difference, as you know, Frank, between providing the logistical support and repair and maintenance and inventory of missiles that's needed in order to keep a fleet operational and combat ready, and building a larger fleet. And the money that the administration is asking for cannot do both. And so the most likely eventuality is that the limited resources that the administration is asking for and the Congress is willing to give will be applied to addressing the readiness problems that exist today.
Band-Aids rather than fixing the other larger problem. We have to pause for just a second. Seth Cropsey will be right back with a further discussion of the steps that are desperately needed to get us out of this mayday situation for the United States Navy and the country right after this.